I want to take a break from the podcast right now, and I want to give you a gift. And I want to do that to thank you for being a listener. I put my heart and soul into this podcast. I love interviewing today's experts, researchers, MDs, psychologists, sleep trainers, you name it. I hope you feel inspired to take care of yourselves and your families. And I just want to thank you for being a listener and hanging out with me. So the code PODCAST10 is going to give you a one-time $10 off code at kellylevesque.com, your next order of protein powder. You can either use that on my grass-fed beef isolate protein or on my new vegan chocho bean protein. Now, here's what I love about my protein powders. It's 3 ingredients or less. So we don't use fillers, emulsifiers, no fortified vitamins or minerals. It's easy to digest and naturally made without any enzymes or chemicals like hexane. So it's 3 ingredients. With my grass-fed beef isolate, that's 100% grass-fed beef, and it's made in the way that you would make bone broth. So just heat and water. And we dehydrate that end product to get that collagen-rich protein powder that your whole family can drink. It can be added to coffees, to smoothies, and you can get it in vanilla, chocolate, and unflavored. I want to point out that my vanilla and chocolate is made with organic vanilla bean, organic cacao, and the only sweetener used is organic monk fruit. We don't use any maltodextrin. Our monk fruit is 100% ground monk fruit, and it's organic. And with my vegan line, I'm so excited to have launched this and to have it out into the world. It's a regenerative bean from South America called the chocho bean. And the chocho bean is the most superior plant-based protein powder you can get your hands on, because not only is it a complete protein, but the process is made with heat and water only. They're crushed and soaked, and what that end product results in is an anti-nutrient-free protein powder. So you're not gonna have any lectins, phytates, or oxalates in your protein powder. Makes it super easy to digest, and it's really, really delicious and robust in cooking as well. So I love it if I want a thicker smoothie or a smoothie bowl. And I also love it in my baked goods, from my cookies to my muffins, pancakes, and breads. It's the perfect protein addition. So if you want to give either of these proteins a try, or you've already been purchasing these proteins and want to take advantage of this special deal, the code PODCAST10 is going to get you $10 off for being a listener here at the Be Well by Kelly podcast. So head to kellylevesque.com or bewellbykelly.com. Put the protein you'd like to purchase in your cart and use the code PODCAST10 for $10 off. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. I just wanted to let you know I'm having a Valentine's Day sale for my protein powder. If you use the code IHEARTYOU on the 13th or 14th of February on my website, you'll get $5 off each bag. So if you are looking to try it, now is the time. I also wanted to thank each of you who've taken the time to review the podcast. I want to thank you personally. I can't tell you how much it means to me to read your reviews, and just to be completely frank, that's how people find us. So here's one. I'm loving this podcast. Kelly packs every episode with tons of amazing content, guests, and interviews that will motivate, uplift, and inspire you. I highly recommend. Well, thank you so much, Stacey. I'm really hoping that this next season of interviews does the exact same thing. I'm hoping to have really fun new guests and repeat offenders like today's guest. Dr. Will Cole is a leading functional medicine expert who consults with people around the world via webcam and locally in Pittsburgh. Named one of the top 50 functional medicine and integrative doctors in the nation, Dr. Cole specializes in clinically investigating underlying factors of chronic disease and customizing a functional medicine approach for thyroid issues, autoimmune conditions, hormonal imbalances, digestive disorders, and brain problems. He is the best-selling author of Ketotarian and the Inflammation Spectrum and his new book, Intuitive Fasting. Dr. Cole is also the host of the popular podcast, The Art of Being Well. It is so exciting to have Dr. Will Cole back. His book, Intuitive Fasting, is up for pre-order right now. And in today's episode, we go deep into fasting. Fasting is a fabulous way to allow the body to heal naturally, but I want to make something very clear. Will shares some advanced intuitive fasting techniques in this episode. If you have a history of an eating disorder, it might be something to skip or discuss with your physician. Fasting isn't for everyone, but it can be a healing modality for so many. And I suggest you pick up the book and see if it's right for you. Oh, Will, it is just so good to have you back. I'm so excited. And you have come out with your third book, Intuitive Fasting. So I guess that, Thanks. Yeah, I mean, it's just so good to see you and so good to have you back. I think the question I have now is, what is intuitive fasting? Because I know what intuitive eating is and how I feel about that.
Well, thanks, Fred. I appreciate you so much. And like, you've been, for everybody that's listening, they probably already love you and they know the type of person that you are. But like, if they're just getting to know you, you are one of the most authentic, kind people in our world and space, and you know, on camera and off camera, you're the real deal for sure.
Oh, thanks, Will. I feel the exact same about you. And I'm just like so excited about all your success because you have a big noggin and a huge brain and a big heart. And and you are writing as quick as humanly possible and getting this information out to people. I mean, I can't believe you're on your third book, but they're, you know, every single one of your books, from inflammation to understanding ketosis and how to use it to intuitive fasting now, which will be out in February. Mm-hmm. You're sharing research, you're sharing tools, and you're not like a one size, one diet, one lane kind of a guy, because you're a functional MD, which I think, you know, that I think for those people listening, they need to understand, like, you see so many different types of patients, you do a lot of diagnostic testing, and you've seen like ketosis, support people, you've seen fasting support people, you understand how inflammation can really be a body burden. So I'm just so appreciative that you have put these books out for people. And I'm so excited to read Intuitive Fasting. But I also want to know, what does it
mean? Thank you. Yeah, what the heck does it mean? So to answer your question. So there's so many levels of why I call it Intuitive Fasting and why I am having this really deep dive conversation in the book. And I'm excited to explain it. So on one like superficial level, like as the writer in me, I just like the play on words. Even with the ketotarian, it was like a made up word that was a like an amalgamation of plant-based with keto. And I wanted to do the same thing with intuitive fasting because the prefix INT and intermittent fasting and intuitive fasting. So I was at, there's that level. But then it's the paradox of how the heck could fasting ever be intuitive? So that's like, well, that just doesn't make sense. Or is it a typo? But it's exactly what I mean. But it's also this whole concept of people having this conversation on social media or this movement of intuitive eating, which, look, if you feel fantastic and you have great health and you eat intuitively and you basically eat whatever you want, just follow your body's intuition and go that way, and your labs look great, your quality of life looks great, and you have peace with food and you have peace in your body, and that's great. I'm so happy for you. But there is the majority of people in the world can't operate that way because I want them to get to intuitive eating. But when they're on the other side of that, they actually have to show up for themselves and give their body time to get to that place where they can actually hear their intuition. So the real conversation that I'm having in intuitive fasting is, how do we get to authentic intuitive eating? Because when somebody is in the throes of hormone imbalance or blood sugar imbalance, which you talk so eloquently about, that's all proverbial noise in the body. And it's really hard to hear through that noise of what that still small voice of your intuition is actually saying. So is it intuition or is it hangriness? Is it intuition or insatiable cravings? Is it intuition or blood sugar imbalance? Because stress eating, insatiable cravings, is not intuitive eating. So for many people, they will know, well, I'm intuitively, I'm going for this junk food that's going to actually perpetuate them feeling horrible in their body. That's the cravings masking itself as intuition. So it's nice to say intuitive eating. It sounds nice, but for it to be something more than just a fluffy, vapid sounding soundbite for Instagram, we have to actually understand what we're talking about. And if you have to have proper hormonal signaling pathways, proper neurotransmitter signaling pathways, proper gut-brain axis, proper blood sugar balance, you need all that stuff to truly be rooted in your body and have clarity on what your intuition is actually saying. What's actually going to better your quality of life? So that's really the conversation. And flexible intermittent fasting paired with a clean, nutrient-dense, ketotarian diet. So it's kind of the continuing of the conversation that I started in Ketotarian, because they're both sides of the same coin. They both improve metabolic flexibility. So that's really what I'm having a conversation is I put together a 4-week flexible cyclical vacillating, ebbing and flowing fasting window. So you're not doing the same thing for too long, but that is this sort of yoga class for your metabolism. So you can actually get flexible to truly know what your body loves and to be authentic intuitive eating, not just a soundbite.
I love that so much. I feel like if there are people listening and they've ever dipped into ketosis or been metabolically flexible and been in a state where their blood sugar is elongated and more of like a flatline curve versus these high spikes and hard crashes. And when I heard the title of your book, I was like, I'm pretty sure I know where he's going with this, which is, it's pretty amazing because those hunger signals and the cues to eat aren't this like, I have to run to the pantry, open the cabinet and eat the pretzels that I know are in there. It's this feeling of like, oh, your stomach kind of does that gurgle thing before you say like, I'm really hungry right now. And the cues are a little bit more physical than mental. And I think when we dip, we are metabolically flexible and we are dipping into fat stores and burning and, you know, producing ketones. It's amazing. Like I have clients who I worry about under eating when they are metabolically flexible like that, because they're able to function at a really high rate and for, you know, long periods of time without eating naturally. And it isn't this like, it isn't this struggle to fast. It's funny too, because anytime I have a client who wants to do say like a 4-day fast once a year, I always push them into ketosis for 3 to 4 weeks before we do that. Because why would I take them from being a blood sugar burner into fasting for 4 days? That's like, that's nausea. That's all the side effects, the headache, the keto flu, like they're going to feel miserable for 4 days versus feeling amazing and strong. So can you go a little deeper into what's happening in the body when and why we're not having these like super strong cravings when we're dipping into ketosis or when we're metabolically flexible?
Sure. So for people to think about this, when we're saying sugar burning mode, we all burn sugar, but if it's your only source of fuel, meaning that you're metabolically inflexible or metabolically rigid, what we're just talking about in this conversation is being bound and stuck and rigid in only sugar burning mode. And that's the hangriness, the blood sugar roller coaster, or the fatigue, the hormone imbalance, the inflammation, all that stuff that happens when the body's metabolically inflexible. So that is akin to like kindling on a fire. You get light from kindling, but it's going to be short-lived. So you have to have 6 small kindling meals a day to get through the day, or you're going to get hangry and your light's going to go out and you get really irritable. There are cleaner kindling options and then there's dirty kindling options, but they're both kindling nonetheless. I mean, you can have more higher whole food-based starches and carbs and sugars. It's still kindling. And there's a place for that. And I talk about that at length. I'm not against that, but it's just, it's one source of fuel. And it should be in a broader context of like, how do you fuel your body? And there's a time and place for clean kindling, and there's a time and place for a log on the fire. So the log on the fire is burning fat for fuel. That's our own fat if we have fat to burn, but it's also exogenous dietary fats from the foods that we eat for fuel. So that is what metabolic flexibility is. It's burning fat, or that log on the fire. It's more sustainable, more slow burning. It's going to last longer. But then when you need kindling, you go for the clean kindling kind and you leverage the benefits of both. So that's what metabolic flexibility, the ability to burn both, really is. So you can go longer without thinking about food. Like you said, the fasting is not arduous. It's intuitive because you're just eating when you're hungry and you have the log on the fire. So you can go longer without meals, but you're still eating amply. You're still eating until you're satiated. You're still eating intuitively, but it's not something that's just a nice theoretical thing that sounds nice, but it's actually truly just how you live your life. It's so innate and second nature that it's just is what it is. And it's you and I, we know this and we see it in patients and clients when they start recovering this metabolic flexibility for themselves. It's just natural for the human body. So it's really cool to see the packing of that and someone coming to life and start to really just, they're not even thinking about it. It's not this dogmatic thing that they're thinking about all the macros or they're thinking about the calories. It's just second nature to them. And that's the grace and lightness that I want for people to have when it comes to wellness. But we have to show up for ourselves to get there. And it takes time because many of us are really metabolically inflexible and we have to give our body the time to be centered and to truly have that discernment on what our body loves and what our body hates.
Yeah, definitely. In your practice, how long do you see it taking for patients to become metabolically flexible? Mm-hmm. And I mean, you obviously wrote a book and a plan to help people get there. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. So metabolic flexibility depends on the starting point, of course. So I put a quiz in the book. People like quizzes, but I adapted the quiz from questions that I ask patients. And I put the plan as a 4-week protocol, but I want them to check in with their body every 4 weeks. I mean, throughout the whole 4 weeks too, but a bigger report card after 4 weeks. So I want them to be seeing significant changes of things moving in the right direction in 4 weeks. Their quality of life is going to improve dramatically in 4 weeks. Depending on where they're at, depending on what they're dealing with, it's going to be different varying amounts of improvements. But for the average person that's dealing with significant metabolic inflexibility, if they're fatigued, if they're struggling with hormonal imbalance, blood sugar problems, chronic inflammation, autoimmune problems, I want them to be trending in the right direction in 4 weeks. I want them to see a light at the end of the tunnel. I want them to have a lot more good days than bad days. But the idea that they're going to be 100% metabolically flexible in 4 weeks is unrealistic. So give your body more time. That's okay. This is not a fad crash plan. This is just you integrating these core things in your life that you need for sustainable wellness and for you to feel great sustainably. So 3-4 months, I want to see great strides in that time. A half a year, way better, way better. But look, some of my patients that are dealing with really severe problems, and that's a lot of my patients' base, is that they're really struggling with complex, complex cases. It could be a year, 2 years to really be at their optimal, but they're feeling better every month. They're feeling better than the month prior. And it's like, that's the real stuff. It's not sexy sounding because it's like everyone wants to like 2 days of this and it's like, I'm better. Yeah. But everyone intuitively knows that's BS anyway. So it's like, they have to like really give their body the time to repair itself. What has taken years in many cases to get to where they're at now, it's going to take some time to get out of it.
Definitely. I love that you touch on that because it's not about the quick fix. It really is about understanding how your body can become metabolically flexible, putting in the work to get there, and then seeing the side effects. What are some benefits that people will feel when they're metabolically flexible and become more of a fat burner?
So the way that I did the fasting windows, we start off with a bigger eating window. It's a 12-12 fasting to eating window in week one. And each week, it's a different fast and different eating window and different way that we're using macronutrients too at the beginning too, to get that clean kindling, get the log on the fire. Like, it's all strategically placed there. And based on who you are, I put tweaks in it throughout the protocol. That's just based on my clinical experience of seeing some people do better with this, some people do better with that. So it is customizable throughout the 4 weeks. But the week one is 12-12. So it's basically 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., you know, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. You're eating, you have all day to eat. Just eat the foods. And then you're just basically avoiding late night snacking to allow your body to fast through the night until it breaks the fast at breakfast. So we're pairing that with a clean ketotarian diet, which, like you said, what you do with your clients, we're kind of amping that up, giving them a nice lean into this. So you're not doing some big, deep fast. You're using food that works synergistically with the time-restricted feeding to prepare their body. And that's exactly what you do with your clients. I had that conversation in the book. I just said, hey, look, if you need an extra week in week one, do it. Don't feel rushed to go in week two if you're like, I'm just getting the hang of this. Again, this is about sustainability here. So maybe they need 2 weeks in week one and doing a 12-12 because you're lowering the sugar. You're working on this clean keto foods, which is mimicking a lot of the benefits of fasting without actually fasting. And week two, we go into 16 to 18 hour fast. So typically that's about a 6 hour eating window. So that's, for example, like a 12 to 6 p.m. You're breaking your fast at lunchtime, and then you're fasting after 6 p.m. to lunch the next day. We're doing that in week two. And then you can do a little bit lighter if you want to do 16, but somewhere in that 16 to 18 range, which I talk about the cardiometabolic benefits, the anti-inflammatory benefits, because what's going on in here? It's you are leaning into some levels of nutritional ketosis, which beta hydroxybutyrate, that main ketone, is a way to burn fat, yes, but it's also a signaling molecule for our biochemistry to lower inflammation, to improve BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, actually making new neurons. There's a lot of repairing mechanisms that are happening in week two. Week three is the deepest fast. It's the cellular renewal week. So it's an almost OMAD approach every other day. So it's not every day, it's non-consecutive, but it's a OMAD for people that are new to this. It's an acronym that stands for one meal a day, or OMAD. And it is I recommend in the book, an almost OMAD approach, because there are studies that show that if you're trying to get all your calories in like such a short period of time, like a 1 hour, 24 to 1 fasting to eating window, which is your classic OMAD approach, that for some people, even if you eat healthy foods, it's just so many calories in such a short period of time, it can increase something called the PKR pathway, which is studies show that it increases something called metaflammation, which is another word for systemic inflammation. It's just too many calories for the body to digest. So I opened it up basically to a 20 to 22 hour fast. So you have a bigger eating window, so you can spread out your calories over the course of that window. That is the deepest fast. We're doing that every other day. So it's almost OMAD 12-12, almost OMAD 12-12 for that week three. The goal of that is that deeper part of that yoga class for your metabolism. We're increasing deeper ketosis. So it's supporting autophagy pathways, which I know you talk a lot about, these cellular renewal, recycling pathways, supporting stem cells, regenerative pathways, longevity pathways, giving our gut a break. There's a lot of far-reaching benefits to that. But we're doing it every other day because I want the refeeding window to be appropriate for that week three. And then in week four, we're opening it back up to 12-12 because it's like that savasana at the end of that yoga class. You are relaxing, you're laying out like, dang, I did that for the past 3 weeks. It's really nice. And you're increasing clean carbohydrates at that time. You're relaxing, you're getting that clean kindling on the fire. That is the template to vacillate and cycle through as many 4 weeks as you need to. And I talk about women and cycling and menstruation, all that stuff. I guess we could talk about that, but there's a lot of nuances beyond that, but that's what they can expect over the 4 weeks.
With each week and the change in the feeding window, it's almost like a new lesson in a class, or, you know, a new challenge in a boot camp, or it's just a fun way to keep people motivated. I think when people decide that they're going to intermittent fast and they're only going to eat from 2 to 8 p.m. for the rest of their life, that gets mundane and boring, and then it doesn't work. It's like any other challenge. We're committing to it or getting excited about it. I really, really love the way that week three works with the OMAD, because I think that's another thing where people will get so excited about OMAD. And then again, it's the same sort of a thing. They're either like stressing their body too much. They don't know if it works for them and their demographic, or like, you know, who they are and what their lifestyle is. They're just like powering through that. I love that you're pairing that with a 12-12 the next day and really kind of reminding the body, like, you are not in fight or flight. You have the food that your body needs, you know, and having that refeeding as well. Super interesting. I have a couple questions, because you did touch on it, about women and, you know, whether that's like HIIT training or aggressive training during this type of fasting lifestyle. What are you seeing in research, and what are you seeing in your practice when it comes to who this is best for, and specifically, like, how is it working with women?
Sure. So, and to touch first on what you just said about a class, another side of the intuitive nature of this that I hope people explore is that they will be able to have their own real life experience, their own N of one experiment for themselves, and say, oh, I felt better with this time restricted feeding. I felt better with this fast. And then they'll get their groove in like 2 or 3 months in of cycling through these. They can start to intuitively readjust the protocol to suit them. So some people do better with more OMAD. Some people do better with the 16, and then they can do more of that and less of the other thing. So that's part of the intuition too, is learning, hey, I felt better, more energetic here, or I felt better here. And then they'll be able to adjust it accordingly. That's having agency over your health, and it won't be something that I'm telling them to do at any point. At that point, it'll just be them owning it for themselves. But the women and fasting topic and question is something that we get a lot. I mean, you get a lot, I get it a lot. It's just a common question because people say, you see it on social media, intermittent fasting is not for women. It's like, you shouldn't do it for women. And that all the studies are done on men. As with most things, context matters, and we can use any study to substantiate our cause or find another study to go against it. It's like, okay, let's just look at the context and the real life side of things. So my day job is, and your day job is, we talk to people all day long about this stuff, and we see the nuances and the bio-individuality of all of this. And the truth is oftentimes sometimes in the middle, and the truth is in context with whoever you're talking about. So yes, it's true that fasting research is mostly done on men and mice, but there are studies that I've looked at women as well. This is what I would say. This is not news for women that are listening to this, but maybe it is. Maybe it's like, oh, I never thought about that. Because even they're being reductionist in lumping all women in the same boat too. Not all women are the same. I know that's like radical. But who are we talking about here? There's a lot of different types of women with going through a lot of different types of things. It's complex. So is she going through PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome? Is she going through endometriosis, adenomyosis? Is her blood sugar all over the place? Is she insulin resistant? Does she have chronic inflammation? That group of people are going to respond to deeper fasts in a way different way than if she's leaner, she's sluggish thyroid, if she's going through a stressful time in her life, if she's not getting enough sleep, completely different outcome. They're all women. So it's so easy to oversimplify and make broad sweeping statements about a whole gender and say, this is not good for them. And it's like, well, that's very simple. That's like going to the gym and saying, you know, feeling bad after you go to the gym and saying, well, the gym's not for me. Well, it's going to take time. Maybe you're doing the wrong workout. Like, how are you doing the workout for your body? It applies to anything under the sun. I mean, we have to look at how it's working for you and do more of that. So I talk about that at length in the book. Yes, that's true that women have higher kisspeptin levels, which is a signaling molecule that tends to make a lot of women more sensitive to deeper fasts. So doesn't mean you throw it out entirely and say, can't use it. It's how are we using it? How can we use it in a way where you leverage all the amazing benefits of intermittent fasting without doing too much for your body, where you fall prey to the potential pitfalls of it? Because more isn't always better, certainly. So it's about a balanced, measured, flexible approach where if you are cycling, if you are menstruating, doing less deeper fasts around your period, the beginning of your cycle, and then around ovulation, but still the rest of the month, you are doing these vacillating, you're not always doing the same thing, you are doing some time-restricted feeding, you will feel amazing, but you've adjusted it to work for your body. So that's the real truth of the matter, is that we do more clean carb cycling around your period or on ovulation, we do lighter fasts around that time, and that's the customization that I was telling you about in the book, that you don't have to be doing the same thing just because it's in a book or just because it's in a protocol, because there is a dance of estrogen and progesterone that we have to consider and talk about. So that's my long-winded answer on that question.
No, it's good. I love that you're giving people options, especially women, when it comes to their cycle and educating them on how to make sure that they're getting what they need to support hormone production and balance, but also get the benefits of fasting. So out of curiosity, when it comes to fasting and, you know, I don't want to call them your rules, but your recommendations in the book, mm-hmm. is there anything that people can be eating or drinking outside of their fasting window?
Yeah.
You know, and what recommendations do you have for someone who's having like fasting side effects?
So that is another very, very common question. You know what the people want to hear. I mean, that is another thing. What could I have during my fast? Does that latte break my fast? Does that collagen protein break my fast? So I would say if anything has little to no calories, if you want to keep it simple, you could just consider that, you know, is tea, coffee, adding in some MCT oil, even adding in some collagen protein. We're talking about really fasting mimicking things. So I don't see a problem with that. You could get a little bit wonky and granular with like the certain like mTOR pathways and the sensitivity to protein, but we're not talking about ample amounts of protein either with like a scoop of collagen protein. So if it makes your fast easier to have that MCT collagen coffee, then do it, because you're going to get so many more benefits with the effortless, easy fast that you enjoy versus this punitive, arduous, miserable thing. So if you want to err on the side of, I want to support the longevity benefits and balance mTOR, the specific pathway for that's associated with longevity, then just stick with tea and coffee for those days. You're not always doing that. But yeah, so that is what I would recommend, is that tea, coffee, add some things that I wouldn't add milk. I wouldn't add in like creamers or things like that per se, but I, you know, little to no calories, keep it clean, and how to make your fast easier if you're struggling with some side effects. And the common side effects are electrolytes being imbalanced, because you're losing a lot of water weight and inflammation, which is good. But when you lose that, that can throw off some sodium, potassium, magnesium, chloride, the electrolytes you need for healthy brain function, heart function, and just feeling good mood-wise. So anxiety can be thrown off too. Like, people can have more anxiety if their electrolytes are off. And that applies to any way your electrolytes can be off, dehydration. So make sure you're drinking enough water, add some sea salt into water. Even if you wanted to add, like there's different supplements that people can have as well. If they wanted to have electrolyte supplements. So just read the labels, make sure there's no added sugar or anything into that. And I wouldn't have sports drinks, obviously, for a number of reasons. Make your own sports drink. Add some Himalayan sea salt into water and it'll be fine.
Yeah, definitely. I have feel so different when I'm using electrolytes. I don't know if you've tried Element yet, but they have an unflavored, which is like just sodium, magnesium, and potassium. I'll have to get you some. You'll love it. Can we go deeper into mTOR? Can you explain what mTOR is? And you mentioned mTOR and protein.
So mTOR is not inherently bad. It's about balance, like everything else in the world. So we want mTOR to be properly regulated and modulated, but not an overdoing of any one thing, especially something that's pro-growth and pro-proliferation like that. So fasting is a way to balance that out, and a clean ketogenic diet helps to balance that out too. Paired together, they both help to help have healthy, balanced mTOR. And I think of Paracelsus. I quoted him in the book. Paracelsus was one of the fathers of modern medicine. He's known as the father of toxicology, but also he was known as the Martin Luther of medicine, because he was reforming medicine at the time in the late 1400s, early 1500s in Switzerland. And he called fasting the physician within, which I think is such a succinct, eloquent way of saying like what we're talking about here. It's like this inner doctor that we all have innately that we can start to tap into to repair and to support health. And it's completely free, which is nice too. So it is, that's what mTOR is. And that's what researchers are exploring as far as the longevity, anti-disease pathways that fasting can help us with.
Well, I think this is the first time in history where we have so much access to food and poor quality food, mm-hmm. fast, cheap, processed food, and fast grown proteins, and, you know, just giving your body a break, allowing it to, like you said, be its own physician, be its own doctor. When you think mm-hmm. about autophagy, and when you think about that like actual cleansing of the body that happens during fasting, it makes sense, because if we're constantly, you know, your body's going to deal with like the biggest offender, or the, you know, what you're putting it in contact with. If you're eating food, it's going to digest the food first. If your blood sugar goes up, it's going to bring that blood sugar down first, because it's protecting you against sort of what you're doing to it in a way. And not giving it a break to say like, okay, what else can we do here to optimize? It's important to consider. Are there mm-hmm. any other genetic pathways other than mTOR that are modulated with fasting?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we are modulating actually a lot of things here. If you think of beta hydroxybutyrate and the pathways it works upon, the things that come to mind that actually excite me probably the most are the anti-inflammatory benefits. So think of it as your own natural endogenous like NSAID, like your anti-inflammatory drug that your body makes the anti-inflammatory drug itself, and it's completely natural. So it lowers things like NF-kappa B pathway, the NLRP3 inflammasome, and the COX-2 pathway, which is similar to like the NSAIDs, like with COX-1 pathway. So it has a lot of natural anti-inflammatory benefits, which is good for so many people. People struggling with autoimmune issues, chronic pain, even chronic fatigue has inflammatory components to it. To anxiety and depression have inflammatory components to it. So this is a great way to support anti-inflammatory pathways and upregulating these pro-antioxidant pathways too, like the AMPK pathway, the NRF2 pathway, basically pro-health, pro-healing pathways. It's so cool. I mean, it all comes back to what Paracelsus says, the physician within. All this stuff is like, you are awakening these pathways that are probably working to some degree, but for many people, they're very downregulated and sluggish. And some of them, they're not fully supported because we're never giving our body the chance to do that. So when you're giving your body a chance to sort of awaken these genetic pathways that are our birthright and our repair mechanisms, these innate healing pathways are just supported exponentially. So it's a really cool time for our body to heal itself.
I love that so much. I feel like if anyone's listening and they are feeling sluggish from 2020 and just probably being so close proximity wise to their kitchen and their pantry and stress eating and late night eating and all of that, this is something that can get them really excited about dipping into their, you know, their body's natural physician and seeing how they may feel. If you were to give me an example of a day in the life of a ketotarian, intuitive fasting superhuman, what would day in the life look like? Let's say in week two, when you're doing a 16 to 18 hour fast.
So that's an easy one. I do that more than any other week. I do that. I do OMAD like in week three a lot. I like week two, I do that pretty regularly. Again, I want people to cycle through these, test it for themselves. And the variability is super, super important, not being stuck in the same way. But I find that I do well with this. So I do like a 12 to 6-ish eating window. So it's about a 17 and a half, 6:30 by the time I get home from the clinic. So that's typically what I do. So I'll tell you what I typically do and what people can do in the book. And the book has lots of recipes and pretty pictures and meal plans and all that other stuff too. So you don't have to do this identically, but I'll typically drink tea in the morning when I wake up. I think we've talked about this before, but for people that haven't heard this before, I will typically drink Earl Grey tea, which has bergamot in it. And bergamot is a citrus from Calabria in Italy. And there's studies to show that bergamot, this essential oil that's in Earl Grey tea, which is a black tea with this bergamot, can support autophagy pathways too. So I'll typically do that and I'll mix it up. I'll have like Pu'er tea. Do you know Peak Tea, the company Peak?
I love Peak Tea because of their testing. Like,
yes.
Testing for heavy metals, testing for pesticides, their microcrystallization process, like keeps all the antioxidants bioavailable. I'm a super fan. Yeah,
me too. Simon Chang, I mean, they're a smart guy. I mean, he is like a tea scientist. So I'll have a wide variety of peak tea. And I have other teas too, but I do love peak because I like just pouring it in and it's just done. It's like, you don't have to wait for it to steep. It's super convenient, tastes perfect. So I'll have their Earl Grey tea. I'll have their black English breakfast. I'll have green tea. I have their Pu'er tea, which is like fermented tea, has some probiotics in it, and green tea too. And then sometimes adaptogenic mushroom tea. They're like chaga tea or reishi tea. I have that. Anyway, so whatever I'm feeling, I'll have that in the morning. And then I break my fast at lunch. So it'll be some ketotarian, clean, ketogenic way of eating at lunchtime. So there's like a pesto zoodle bowl with like, which is zucchini noodles with some eggs on that. So you get some choline from the yolk, which is great for the brain, it's healthy fats, drizzle that with extra virgin olive oil. It's pesto, so it tastes freaking amazing. And you can add some wild caught fish to that too, like add like a salmon, some added bioavailable omega fats, extra protein, extra calories. And then you could have a smoothie. You could do, honestly, a Fab Four smoothie at lunch. And then if I'm hungry and during my eating window, so I'm eating between 12 and 6 p.m., I'll have like sea snacks, like the seaweed snacks. I love those. They're in olive oil too, and they taste good. Or I have some nuts and seeds maybe. Or like even like a bulletproof bar, I'll have those occasionally. Like those are good. And then for dinner, I'll have like, normally it's some protein again, like a salmon, some other fish, maybe albacore tuna, something like that. Or you know what I also like? Another recipe in the book, it's the spicy frittata with some eggs. It's really good. And I love avocado fries. So they're just like sliced avocado breaded with almond flour with this chipotle aioli dressing. And you can add some extra snack. But I mean, that's like a typical day. And then, yeah, I mean, it's, and I love peanut butter. Yeah. Which your husband loves peanut butter too, right?
Oh, he eats like a jar every 2 days.
Yeah, I mean, I'm basically on that point too. Yeah. And I get good peanut butter. I mean, I get good peanut butter. I think we've talked about this before too, but I love peanut butter. So I have some peanut butter just off the spoon. Yeah, that's a typical day. Pretty easy.
I love it. You're intuitively eating, you're snacking when you need to. But all of those snacks are really blood sugar regulating. They're really filling, regulating those hunger hormones and getting you the fat that your body needs if you want a quick hit, if you are in the ketogenic space.
Yeah.
State, say.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I really want everyone to snag your book. And I love that you've broken it down for women and, you know, given us other options when it comes to cycling. Can we touch on like training during fasting? Like
Whether
if people do yoga or if they run, or is this, you know, how do they modify this fasting plan for that? Or do they need to?
Yeah, they don't always need to. It depends on how heavy the workout, how consistently they're doing, and then how metabolically inflexible they are when they start. So sometimes I find that if someone's really, this is really new to them, and that's part of the self-paced in week one, is that maybe they want to repeat week one for 2 or 3 weeks to just prepare their body. Because what I find is that if they're really metabolically inflexible, their blood sugar is all over the place, and they jump into the deeper fast in week two all the time, doesn't work for them. Maybe some days of the week they can do it, but they need to open up their eating window a little bit. And for people to be clear on this, we aren't limiting calories in any of the weeks. The goal of this is not caloric restriction. There might be a slight deficit of caloric calories because with tighter eating windows, studies have shown that people just generally will eat less, but that's not the point of it. There's studies to show that if you keep calories the same, but there's just the specific windows that we're doing over the 4 weeks, that's really where the health magic comes into play. It's the benefits because you're giving your body a break to repair and to heal and all of that stuff. So I want you to be eating amply throughout those 4 weeks. So most of the time, workouts work really well because you're well-fueled, you're well-nourished. And as you become more keto-adapted and metabolically flexible, it's going to benefit your workout. So most of the time, people don't have to worry about it. The problem that I have is exactly what you said a while ago in the conversation is people are not eating enough foods. So it's just making sure you're fueled enough and eating enough during your eating window. That's really where it comes into play. But heavy workouts with the deeper OMAD, that could be something where you would want to maybe time your workout and your eating window accordingly, because it is a deeper fast. Or do your workouts, because since it's non-consecutive, do your workouts on the 12-12 if you find it to be tough. So everybody's different. Everybody's doing different levels of workouts too. But that there's a benefit to fasted workouts, but there's also benefits for non-fasted workouts too. So don't feel like you have to always work out on your fasted day. You can move it around. And there's a time and place for that clean kindling. Sometimes people do their clean carb up days and cycle those carbs, not just around their menstrual cycle, but around really heavy workouts. So that's okay too. You can just strategize based on your schedule, these tools to make it work for you.
I dig it. I'm all about tools. You know, not everything is for everyone, but what I love about health books in general, I know sometimes they make people feel overwhelmed or they have to do it perfectly. And if they don't do it perfectly, then they're not going to see the benefits. Like, I love to read books like yours and, you know, all the books that come out and say like, cool, this is a tool. How can I use it? How can I apply it? And you're giving people this tool, just even if it's the first week. Like, say someone does the first week and they're like, I'm digging this. I'm feeling great. I'm going to do this for 3 or 4 weeks. Then maybe I'll try week two, or maybe I'll just try week three and see what an OMAD feels like in my body. Like, you're informing people and also giving them a plan if they want to follow it, if that gets them, I guess, more consistent with it. But
yeah,
it's great. It's so great because that, I mean, we get these questions on Instagram or, you know, from clients all the time. Like, should I have a fasted workout? Well, here are the benefits of a fasted workout, like an increase in human growth hormone, an increase in testosterone, an increase in burning fat for fuel, you know, becoming a little more metabolically flexible. Where might the problems come? Well, if you're doing it all the time and you're never refueling glycogen stores, and you would actually get a better, harder, stronger lift or workout if you fueled yourself, then there's sort of a toss up there, right? Like a gassed workout if you're not metabolically flexible versus, you know, a fueled workout where you're working out harder and lifting heavier and seeing more muscle build there. I mean, that's the thing about nutrition and about health science is like, it totally depends on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's context matters in so many levels, and it's so easy for people to get so stuck in their one way and their one lane and pontificate their tribal opinion about it. But when you see people, as much as we've seen people in different cases, it allows you to be a lot more open-minded to these as tools that are really amazing, but people need to experiment with themselves and find out what works for their body instead of thinking that has to be this specific level of finite things that's going to work for the same. It's going to work for everybody. We can't hang our hat on one size fits all for everybody. We'd be proven wrong all day long when you see clients and patients. So these are all strategies. And I think that's really what people miss in our culture today. It's so black and white. It's so all or nothing, but these are amazing tools to use in a way that works for you.
Well, thank you for giving people another toolkit to get started with in 2021. I'm so excited. So where can people pre-order the book? Where can they follow along?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, everything's at drwillcole.com. That's drwillcole.com. They can pre-order intuitive fasting there. During pre-order, there's a lot of really cool like pre-order swag. Like we're doing a private fasting group, which I'm super pumped about. We're going to start that in March, like after the book's out on February 23rd, but they get access to the shopping guide that I'm making off of the meal plan in the book. And they get a sneak peek of the book when they pre-order, and they get access to the private fasting group, which we're doing live Q&As with me and all that stuff. So yeah, everything's there, but you can get the book on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, all the places.
Well, I feel like the bonuses are going to get people excited. I'd want to join that little private fasting group and get myself a shopping list. Make it easy for me, Will.
That's right. Join me.
Cool. We'll make sure there are links to this in the show notes and everyone knows where to grab the book and get all the extra swag. And if they are interested in your other books and your courses and all that good stuff, it's all there. And yeah, so it's just so good to see you. And
thanks,
happy New Year. Thanks for joining us. I'm glad we could learn a little bit more about intuitive fasting today.
Thanks. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Be Well by Kelly. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at bewellbykelly.com and follow me on Instagram at bewellbykelly. I would love if you picked up my books, Body Love and Body Love Every Day. They're sold on Amazon and at all major booksellers.